You are listening to Breaking Away, a candid podcast by Chris, developed for the sex-positive community, exploring adult-themed societal norms and how some are breaking away from them. Please know this podcast will contain adult themes and adult language. If you're okay with this, stay tuned for this week's episode. Well, hi, Molly. Thank you so much for joining me today on Breaking Away. It's so great to finally chat with you. We've been interacting on Twitter for quite some time.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I'm really excited.
Awesome. So, of course, I've been following you on Twitter, but why don't you give a little bit of background, who you are and kind of why you reached out to be on this podcast?
Sure. Well, my name is Molly. I live in Buffalo, New York. I'm 29. I'm a medical social worker. I work full time for a software company now, but I do private practice with what my practice likes to call alternative couples or non-traditional couples, which are pretty much any thing on the LGBTQ spectrum to swinging, polyamory, that kind of stuff. I also teach psychology at a college level. So that's kind of my professional background. I found polyamory when I was 23, got introduced to it then. I've been polyamorous since. I got introduced to swinging just in the last year or so, and I've had a pretty interesting experience with that. And I'm also pretty active in the kink community. I'm active on FetLife. I'm actually a cam girl on Chatterbait as a hobby. I'm just an exhibitionist. I don't ever cash the money in because I've never wanted it on my taxes. But that's another part of it. And I live with my fiance here in Buffalo. And then I have a very serious long distance partner who lives in New Orleans, Louisiana. So I've always kind of had long distance partners for the last about 4 years of my poly journey. So I did my first presentation at Rochester Erotic Arts Festival this year on polyamory and long distance and kind of the specifics that go into those types of relationships.
Oh, long distance, that's a whole subject in of itself.
It sure is. That's
a layer of polyamory on top of that.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm a polyamorous woman dating a man who is, well, non-monogamous. So he doesn't really consider himself polyamorous. So there's, you know, even differences just in that.
Absolutely. So we'll just kind of start out here. First question, when you hear the term sex positive, what does that mean to you?
I think for me, it really comes down to inclusivity and acceptance. And acceptance not on a, I fully understand and accept what's happening level, but on a level of, is this harming me or others? No, I might not know a lot about it, but it's not my place to judge about it. So for sex, sex positivity to me is really about taking away the stigma around sex. One of the reasons I love going to swingers clubs, even though I don't play with folks there, is because I love being anywhere where sex is normalized and people aren't repressed about it. Even getting married this year, you know, 3 out of 5 of my bridesmaids really don't know much about my other partner or my polyamorous lifestyle or anything like that. So sex positivity for me is really just trying to normalize, things that have been formerly taboo that really don't need to be things that people really don't need to feel repressed about.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I found really interesting when I was chatting with you was you're comfortable using your name just as I am. And I find that's very rare, balancing work, life, friendships, trying to bring sex positivity and reducing, the shame and stigma around it. I mean, I'm very public, so it was quite refreshing to hear that you are as well.
Yeah, I am public. I mean, I will say my life is pretty compartmentalized when it comes to it. It's funny when Rochester, the Reef, what's called Reef Rochester Erotic Arts Festival, posted my professional biography, which I sent to them, I was like, wow, if you search my name on Google now, it will take you to this page that will give you all this information that I'm polyamorous and I'm in the kink community. And I was like, okay, this is like really the first time I'm really publicly outing myself, because even on my own personal Facebook, I very rarely will post things about polyamory, but for the most part, it's not so much an issue of not being accepted by my family, but I just don't want to have to explain myself to them. So okay. It's kind of easier for me that way. But as far as Twitter goes, that Twitter, I actually started as like an anonymous Twitter. I have like a personal Twitter as well that I don't use anymore. And I started that Twitter as a place to kind of put feelings about polyamory. I was only a few years into it at that point and hadn't had the best experiences looking back now. And that's kind of where it started. So like the beginning of that Twitter was just really heavy, just polyamory memes and you know, very like I saw in your blog you use like first letters of people's names like to denote them. So I would denote partners, you know, the same way. And it eventually, because I listen to so many podcasts, it was a public Twitter. I started interacting with people through there, and now tons of my real friends follow me there. And at 29, I've kind of, my family knows that I'm polyamorous. This is just how it's going to be. So whether or not, you know, we're all accepting of it, who knows? But yeah, I have to live my life out loud, because there's really nothing shameful about it.
Oh, absolutely. And I think when I say that you are out and live it publicly, there's always the, you know, the understanding that, you know, you don't talk about your sex life on Facebook. You're not.
Absolutely. You know, yeah, absolutely.
You know, about your intimate night, you know, the day before. So there is a level of, you know, restraint when it comes to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. You know, people like are always like shocked to find out that I consider myself queer. And it's like, well, I'm sorry, I didn't like inform you that I've been with women. I didn't inform you what men I've been with recently, and that wasn't an issue. So.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. That's, yeah, I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, it's very simple. This weekend actually is Pride in Buffalo. It's Pride Month, which is very exciting. And this weekend is the first time I bought a shirt that says Chaotic Queer. I'm like a huge D&D nerd. And I'm going to wear it. And I'm a little bit nervous because I know there's going to be pictures on Facebook, and I don't know if my family is going to contact me, but like, I'm ready to do it. And my boyfriend said to me last night, I said, I just don't know if I'm really queer enough. And he said, if you're waiting for somebody to send you a letter in the mail saying that you've done enough to be consider yourself queer, it's not going to come. You know, you have to do it or not do it. So I'm kind of excited, and I'm kind of feeling empowered about it. And you know, I can't see it going poorly, because it's living my truth and I'm excited for it. And, you know, whether that outs me to more people on Facebook by a t-shirt, or people may just see it and think, oh, it's Pride, whatever, you know, because I'm very much known as an ally to the LGBT community, mm-hmm. you know, but yeah, it'll be interesting, you know, it's something that's coming up, and I'm excited.
And talking about you being an ally to the LGBT community, what kind of does that entail for you?
Yeah, so one of the things that I've done here in Buffalo is I've worked at the Pride Center a little bit in working with transgender folks, helping them navigate the healthcare system, because I am a medical social worker, and there's just kind of a niche to, well, you're in Canada, correct?
I am, yes.
Yeah, okay, so there's a lot with private health insurance here, and navigating that and figuring out what's covered, what, you know, is GRS covered under my insurance? Is it better for me to go on a state plan? So I've kind of worked in that as far as like volunteer work done, but as far as just being an ally in general, I always considered myself a strong ally, because I always had a lot of friends that were queer. My fiance and my boyfriend my fiance is bisexual. My boyfriend identifies as pansexual. Most of my friends, you know, identify in some other way. I have friends that are non-binary, are trans, and it's always, being an ally for me is always being ready to help explain things to people who don't understand, and, you know, being willing to step up and use my privilege as a straight white presenting woman, mm-hmm. to, you know, speak up for those who don't have as much privilege as me as well. So those are important things to me.
that's something that I'm noticing a bit more on Twitter because, you know, people are a little bit braver on Twitter.
Oh, sure.
A little bit of a backlash for straight people standing up for different communities or, you know, white people standing out for different communities. You know, it seems like I don't know, for lack of a better word, there's been a little bit of a pushback. Have you experienced any of that?
I haven't really experienced that because I think I'm lucky enough. I don't have a huge following on Twitter, so I don't think I get a lot of I don't post too much that would cause anything, but certainly I've seen that. And I think that there are certainly white people who are acting as gatekeepers to things that they shouldn't. And I certainly think there are straight people that are acting as gatekeepers to things that are shouldn't. They shouldn't. I really don't know if gatekeepers should really exist at all. But yeah, I mean, there is a backlash. I think what it really comes down to is the intention behind somebody's comment, you know, whether, you know, for a long time I didn't have any pictures of me on my Twitter. So there was nothing to say that I was a white woman. You could probably have figured out that I was a woman through it, but or identified as a woman, but you know, didn't have anything about my race. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm very active and I'm a super drag fan, super RuPaul's drag fa race fan, and there is a lot of racism issues there. And I don't always feel comfortable jumping in about discussions about, you know, how Black and people of color queens are treated, just because so often you're told that your opinion doesn't matter, and it does matter. It's just about the intention behind it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not that I'm gatekeeping. It's that we have to make this world as colorful as possible because it's happening around us, and if we don't start accepting it, it's going to be like a hell of a next 20 years.
That's yeah, I think you basically expressed my position much clearer than I've been able to, because it's a subject I've literally tried to just avoid because I don't feel like the backlash is helping anybody.
No, and it isn't. And I don't respond to it. I'm just like, okay, you know, that's fine. If you don't want to take my opinion seriously, that's fine, regardless of professional experience I have or personal experience I have. I think it's just really just about checking your privilege when you are making comments, you know, when and just knowing that, you know, this is how you present to the world, but also kind of just knowing when to brush people off and say, you know, people are just mad because they're mad and their energy is getting focused on me, but it's not about me. So, you know, and that's much easier said than done.
Boy, is that the truth?
Yeah. Is the therapist coming out in me a bit?
I love it. It's you know, the more kind of diversity of opinion and experiences, I think the easier it is to kind of move forward with, you know, building this community and making it inclusive.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just, yeah, it is. I mean, even and it's really a lot of the issue is that people just assume based on maybe pictures or how you present, you know, in a certain way. And you know, some things could be farther, you know, furthest from the truth. You know, one of my partners does identify as non-binary, but prefers to use male pronouns because he's very masculine presenting. But you know, that doesn't diminish his struggle as being a non-binary person in this world, you know, just because he doesn't ask people to say they or them. So I think it's just about, but he's a white male, so you know, how much can he really put up a fuss about it? So you know, there's things like that too. It doesn't just because he's a white male, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have the same struggles that any, you know, person of color going through the same thing would have, but the privilege levels are different and the accessibility to help is different and the acceptance is different. So that those are the things that really matter. Not so much that it's just a white person standing up and saying something, you know, about people of color or about something, or a straight person standing up and, you know, being told that they can't be an ally for the community. You know, it's hard when you see those really long blog posts about like that a lot of, you know, and I don't, it's an awful thing to say, but a lot of white gay men who write these blog posts about how they hate white straight women in their safe spaces and these gay bars. But, you know, it's, you don't know. You have no idea. If it's a bachelorette party, sure. Maybe you can assume the bachelorette is maybe marrying a man, but you don't know. I mean, right. You know, I just, it's just a lot of, you know, and they're contributing to an economy that is constantly on the verge of dying. I mean, gay bars in America close all the time. 4 neighborhood bars a day close in America. So, like, we should be patronizing anywhere that we can locally. Like, who cares if it's a group of straight women? Did you, like, want to check all of their, like, sexual partners before they come in? It's just a lot of stuff like that I think we have to be cognizant of, is that you can't just assume based on, you know, what you see with somebody.
And I think to just expand on that a little bit, it's very difficult to validate people like that.
Or yes.
To ask them to. For myself, I try to live as label-free as I possibly can. I really enjoy the idea of being fluid in my relationships and being more dynamic than, you know, saying, okay, I'm a swinger, I'm polyamorous, I'm non-monogamous, I'm in an open relationship. Like, I tend to, you know, my back goes up a little bit when people label me these certain things based on, you know, whatever their, you know, kind of their perception is, or just one tiny post I've put out.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. I would have to say I'm a little bit different. I don't love labels, and I could care less about labels, and I could care less what people want to call themselves. And when people are like, oh, this, I just had my aunt the other day. I posted something, a post on Facebook that was like, things that queer culture teaches you that straight culture doesn't. And she really is very well-meaning, and she just didn't understand. She thought that queer was a derogatory word still. So we were having a conversation about it. And I said, well, you know, none of these terms are none of these, you know, these, she's like, I don't know what this asexual means. And, you know, she mentioned a bunch of things. And I said, you know, none of these terms are new, you know, but if it makes people more comfortable to have something to identify with, you know, then that's fine for them. And what did she tell me? She told me, she said, you know, I think if you young people got more sleep at night, you would have much less identity issues. And I said, thanks, Aunt Sharon. I will pass that on to all of my friends. It was very sweet. It was very like, she truly just wants our generation to be happy. And she's just doing her best to understand what's going on. And it was very sweet. And, you know, a lot of people might be offended by something like that, but, you know, you have to be patient with people. And it's definitely something I've learned. Yeah, labels for me, I hold labels very true to myself. In my Twitter profile and my Facebook profile, I identify myself as a social worker. I identify myself as a professor. I identify myself as a partner, a sister, a daughter. Those are all things that are really important to me. But then when it comes to sexuality and relationship types, yeah, I think people can really fall, you know, wherever they want. You know, even just the difference between my boyfriend and I saying, you know, he's a non-monogamist and I'm polyamorous. Those are just words that we choose, you know, but they're not, you know, it doesn't have to be on my headstone at the end of the day. And who knows? And am I polyamorous, but am I also a swinger because I've played in the swinger community? Or, oh, this lovely gentleman I met at Rochester Erotic Arts Festival who was 72, and he has been polyamorous since he's been in open relationships and a swinger for over 50 years. And he calls himself it was a combination of the word poly and swinger. And it was just like the cutest little thing. And he's like, I think I was poly before poly was a thing. And I was like, probably, like, you know, but yeah, I think labels are certainly becoming more fluid, and gender is so much more fluid, and we could really, really do well with kind of working away from those things.
So what has been your experience in swing clubs? Gone to lifestyle clubs, or kind of what's been your foray?
Yeah.
In?
Yeah, so I've been a cam girl for about 3 years, and always have enjoyed sharing pictures of myself and doing that. And that's always been a hobby. It started when I was out of work with my leg broken and I just wanted people to talk to during the day. I have a pretty boring cam, to be honest. I don't do anything below the waist, so it's not a big money maker. But so I started there, and I finally my boyfriend was like, I don't know why you're not on FetLife. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I should get on FetLife. So I got on FetLife like last fall, which is like took me a long time to like get there from like all of the things I've done in these last 7 years. I started there and I met somebody there. I met someone who became my dom for quite some time. And he was a swinger and introduced me to a local swingers club here outside of where I live. And I joined then Swingers Lifestyle, which, you know, is the website for swingers. And I've had an interesting few months. We have a great club out here outside of, it's about an hour outside of Buffalo, called Bad Kitty, that is super wonderful. It's super inclusive. It's super clean. It's super great. The people are wonderful. And it's really one of my favorite places to go and just drink and hang out. I don't play very often, but I just love being anywhere where sex is normalized and people are more open-minded. It's not quite like I haven't been up to like M4 in Toronto or any of like the big you know, swinger scenes with the fancy leather couches and things, but we're doing okay down here. We have, you know, it's a nice club, and I really like it, and I like the people. You know, it's kind of a different, it's a different world I found with swingers, just because I do identify so strongly as polyamorous, because romantic and romance is important to me. And I found with swingers, that's not always the case. And it's usually not the case. Yeah. And that doesn't really work well for me. So when I am talking to or chatting with couples or single men who play in the swinger scene, you know, I have to, I try to help them to understand that, like, I'm not looking for, you know, one night thing that doesn't have any build up to it, and we just meet up and that's it. I like a little bit more substance to it. So I'm kind of an outlier in the swinger community that way. But yeah, so the swing has been interesting for me. It's gone really well, and I've gotten my heart hurt a little bit. But you know, if you have a heart, you're going to have a little heartache.
Absolutely. No, I really identify strongly with kind of being an outlier in the swing community, because I, you know, we don't play when we go there. We're there to meet people and interact. And again, that's, I think, something that a lot of people don't understand. They just assume everybody is there for, you know, wall-to-wall orgies.
Right.
I have a lot of that. And really, it's just normal people who, you know, if they want to be naked, they can be naked. If they want to talk about sex, they can talk about sex. If they want to, you know, show off their kink or, you know, go into the dungeon, they can. And it's just an environment where, you know, it's a night out, and you can kind of be a different self that you would be in than in your 9-to-5.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, yeah, it's really like one of my favorite places to go now. And it's like, it, and our other thing is, like, our swingers clubs here, at least in New York, are pretty much like all BYOB, so it's a cheaper night out as well. So which I always like, but
well, I believe they have to be.
Yeah, you know, so you know, I like to meet people when I'm out. You know, one of the things that was hard, a little bit hard for me to get used to at the swingers club, was the amount of touching that people do. And it is kind of an environment where I have some sensory issues that go along with ADHD. So I'm not a huge toucher. And I don't care to be touched by people I don't know. And swingers clubs are kind of a blanket bit of consent that you're kind of okay with, you know, meeting women for the first time and they reach out, oh, you have such great tits. And, you know, and it's that kind of thing. That took a little bit of getting used to, but, you know, very easily am I able to say, oh no, you know, thanks so much, but I'm not a big toucher, you know. those kind of things that just kind of were things that I had to get used to in the swinging community and at these clubs that were a little different for me. But playing as a partnered polyamorous woman in the swingers community as a single woman is always really interesting. I usually always have to answer, well, does your fiance play? No, he has a girlfriend. He has other partners. He's not a swinger. Well, does your boyfriend play? Well, he lives 1,200 miles away. If you want to fly him up, that'd be great. You know, but so kind of playing, you know, and then kind of balancing that. And it's been an interesting experience, but also a really wonderful experience.
No, I'm just sitting here basically nodding along with you going, yeah, I've had these experiences. Yes, this is what it's actually like.
Yeah. And it is. And, you know, it's great. And it's been fun. And I like SLS and, you know, dating couples is a newer thing for me. I've only been kind of courting couples for about 8 months because I really don't have the time or energy to really commit to being in any type of triad situation. Especially now I've kind of made the decision with my fiance that because I date quite a bit, that I'm not going to date until after our wedding in October, just because we just don't have time. I can't continue to try to divide my time. Because unfortunately time is like a finite thing. So it's been interesting, trying to figure out what I'm going to do with that. So I've made some really good friends. I would go to our swingers club as a single woman, but I wouldn't go by myself. So I typically would take like a male friend who also was maybe going alone. That's probably the only thing, you know, that's a little bit different about it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't feel unsafe there in any way. But yeah, I'm sorry. I lost the question.
No, it's all good. I'm tangents here. What I'm all about. I think that's a very valid point. I hope people don't misconstrue the idea that anybody is unsafe there, but there are hurdles with consent, and it's a different vibe.
Yeah,
when it comes to that, for a very, very long time, I believe women were just allowed to do whatever they wanted in lifestyle clubs. Absolutely. And while that's starting to change, it's a very slow thing.
Yeah, and as I mean, until very recently, I pretty much identified as straight and had never been with women. So for me, it was even more of a, I'm not attracted to you either with this touching. So it's making me extra uncomfortable. But certainly I wouldn't say that, at least in my experience in the swingers club that I attend, there's, you know, I have never felt unsafe or, you know, they're very vigilant, and it's not a huge place. I mean, the most people I've seen there is maybe 100, 150, but they police it very well. And really swingers police themselves very well, which is very nice. You know, people, if somebody sees you uncomfortable, they're going to come over and talk to you. And it's the same I would do for anybody else. So yeah, I think that is an important part of it, is that it's not a dangerous place, but yes, women do. That is something that is still very rampant in the club that I go to, and the owner of it is actually the one who does it the most to me, which I kind of, you know, just brush off and move on from, because she says, oh, I forget you don't like to be touched. And I do appreciate her like remembering after, but yeah, you know, it's just kind of different hurdles. And, you know, when I do go out to those clubs, it reminds me how different polyamory is from swinging, and that, you know, no, Molly, you're not like in a, you know, just because you're in a place where you're seeing all your favorite things, it doesn't mean that they all do things the same way as you. So, you know, it's been interesting though. It's just been a really interesting experience with that. But yeah, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. from you having more of a background with polyamory and kink, where, you know, consent is kind of the start off point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've
you were been... just saying the word consent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I am identify and play a lot in like the DDLG kink stuff, which is daddy dom little girl, which is pretty much very similar to a dom sub relationship, but a lot of people feel like it sexualizes children, which it doesn't. I play with it more in the way that it's very gentle submission. It's very gentle earned submission. And so I've been doing that for a long time, for a few years. So that's all about consent, and you kind of all have the power as the sub. So yeah, that was different to kind of go into that. And then with polyamory, of course, disclosure, transparency. I mean, those are the most important things to make it work. So, you know, those things are a little different in the swinging community as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very interesting point. Kind of those biases and the sexualization. I mean, that's a taboo that's got to be a little bit difficult to overcome, or I guess talk about even publicly.
Yeah, it's not something I talk too much about publicly, but I'm certainly not like ashamed of it in any way. I don't age regress like most people do. I always say like DGLG is very light for me. And it is, but I prefer to call my daddy or my dom a daddy. You know, that's kind of just how I prefer it. And I've kind of, it took me a long time to kind of come to terms with that, because I had been a part of like, I had like seen, I'm in all these different kink Facebook groups and, you know, I'm kink shaming groups, and people really, really speak out powerfully against DDLG. And there are people I think who certainly probably exploit it and do cross lines with it maybe. But, you know, for me, I don't use it that often, because I then have to have a big explanation on why, how I'm not doing it wrong. But, you know, it is what I like, and it's a pretty typical dom sub relationship, and has, you know, most of the same dynamics.
Are you finding, I know you're not super active in it, but have you noticed a change with all, you know, the Facebook and the social media cracking down on anything that uses certain words?
I haven't experienced that. My boyfriend is a very active Tumblr user. And I know his Tumblr is like gone after the purge. But no, I haven't really, I don't talk too much about it on Facebook. I'm in a really wonderful giant poly group on Facebook called Poly Geekery that has like 78 subgroups. It's got like 10,000 people in it, and it's a fantastic resource. If you ask to join it, if they don't let you in, just try again. They just are like really weird about their screening process. For anybody who's listening that wants to join it, it's a phenomenal Facebook group. It has as many downsides as it has upsides. But no, I wouldn't say I really have found much censorship there, but I also don't, I guess, maybe talk super openly. I mean, I use FetLife as much as I use Facebook. So it's just kind of switching brains for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Going where the people are and going where the, you know, the information and the experience that you want.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, awesome. So yeah, is there anything else you would like us to know? Do you have questions for me? Anything you want to touch on?
I guess, I mean, I don't know. Have you talked about long distance relationships on your blog at all?
No, I think I've done one post on them, and it was way back in 2011, 2012, and I couldn't even tell you what I to that point. It's so interesting when you've been blogging for such a long time, going back in time and seeing how your opinions and your experiences change things.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can only imagine. I'm honestly glad I don't have a blog of the last 8 years, because yeah, I would have to have some talks with myself.
I do have talks with myself. Like, oh man, I can't believe I wrote that. But at the same time, I think it would be inauthentic of me to take anything down.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's all about showing growth, and and we're constantly evolving. And you know, I always say, like, I'm 29 now. I hope when I'm 30 I look back and say I didn't know shit at 29. You know, I hope that that's every year of my life. Because in my opinion, knowing nothing is better than knowing it all, because then you're just open to learning new things all the time. But I think with long distance relationships, I just think it's important for people to know like how not impossible they are. People feel like they're impossible or they're not a good idea, but in polyamorous setups, it's actually a pretty wonderful thing. And works really well in a lot of those type of dynamics, because you can balance partners a little bit easier, especially time with partners. I get to see my long distance partner about a total of 3 weeks a year. We get together. We see each other every 4 months, every 3 to 4 months, depending on our schedules. But I would just say for anybody that wants to be in a long distance relationship, you can certainly make it work. And there are, you know, tips and tricks and techniques and apps and routines and, you know, things that can make it successful. So.
And how long have you been in a long distance relationship?
Yeah. So the current one that I'm in right now, we're just coming up on a year. Before that I was in another year relationship, and before that I was in a 2-year long distance relationship. So my first one was in Peoria, Illinois, and that was about an 11-hour drive from where I am. My next one was in Philadelphia, PA, so that was only about a 7-hour drive. And now I've been with David for about a year, and this is, you know, we can only fly to see each other, so it's not something that's super new to me, but I don't, you know, see it ending anytime soon, but we have a really great setup for both of us. It works really well. But there is, you know, I talk a lot when I do presentations on long distance and stuff, there is some privilege in being able to have a long distance relationship, because you have to be able to have, you know, the time to put into the relationship, because I don't have any passive time with David. We don't watch TV next to each other or do dishes near each other or are in the same home for 3 hours a day, you know, before bed. So it's a real active type of relationship that you have to really put the time into, or it will just die out. But I also think it's really interesting to build a relationship that is not built on physicality. We met on Chatterbait when I was like camming while working from home. And we met, and it wasn't, you know, an instant sexual thing. It was like, wow, you're really cool. I really like talking to you. Let's talk on Kick, and now let's, you know, move to this other messaging platform. And, you know, a year later now, we've been together 4 times in person, and he's actually had the ability to meet my fiance because my cousin got married in New Orleans. So we were going for a family trip anyway, which was wonderful. So even in long distance, you know, I've been able to really incorporate David into my everyday life, and my friends know about him. And, you know, my coworkers were just joking the other day, like, Molly gets to go to New Orleans 4 times a year, you know? So, you know, it is possible. It's worth it. It's wonderful. I just think there are some benefits to long distance that people kind of are quick to just kind of negate. But it works really well for me. Maybe as somebody with sensory issues who doesn't love touching and cuddling and I don't need that. But being polyamorous, you know, you can have local partners for those things. So that's what I think is kind of interesting. So I'm in a group, actually a subgroup of Polygeekery about long distance relationships. And it's a really wonderful support network of people where we come together and share ideas of, you know, one of my favorite things is wish you were here pictures, which is like, I'll be out to get coffee and I'll take a picture of the empty chair across from me and say, you know, wish you were here. Those little things. So there's just a lot of nuance to long distance, and I think people are like quick to dismiss it, but opening your world to people, opening, you know, what you're looking for to the entire world as opposed to who's within 50 miles of you can be really wonderful, and you can really find somebody who you connect really well with. So I've been fortunate enough to have found it really kind of 4 times over. I dated somebody for a long time too in Sacramento. That was another one that I had to fly to. But there is, you know, some privilege and accessibility of being able to travel to see people and being able to put aside you know, some weeks David and I talk for 2 hours on video chat one time a week, and some weeks we talk for an hour and a half every day. So, you know, I have that ability. I don't have kids. I have one partner who's a chef, so he works crazy hours. So, you know, there is some, you know, privilege and accessibility to it. But I think long distance relationships are just really wonderful and kind of an underrated type of relationship.
Well, I think just from chatting with you, the one difference that I'm kind of hearing is you didn't start, at least not with your most recent ones, with somebody who then moved away. So you weren't trying to maintain a relationship. It started in a place that you already knew it was going to be long distance.
I did. And what's also different about a lot of polyamorous long distance relationships or open relationships is the idea, what's different in most long distance relationships is that there's always an end date of we're going to be together at this time, or we're going to be in the same city eventually. Mm-hmm. There's probably a chance that David and I will never live in the same city. He doesn't ever want to move up here. I have no interest in living in New Orleans. So kind of like balancing that and trying to figure out what does that really look like longevity wise, and does it matter?
Expectations.
Right. Yeah. And then also managing metamors at a distance is another thing that has been a really interesting experience with David. I became really good friends with a woman that he was dating for a long time, and they recently broke up. So it's been really interesting kind of trying to manage some type of friendship with her after she hurt my partner so badly. And also when they were together, if they were fighting, you know, just managing metamors in general can be difficult, but doing it long distance is like another layer to it. And metamor meaning my partner's partners, for I guess I have to remember, I guess this is going to be published somewhere.
Well, that's the goal.
yeah absolutely. Yeah, but yeah, metamors, you know, that's really important. I'm really, really lucky. When my fiance actually met and had our first date, he was engaged to somebody else, and they broke up and he lived on his own for a year. And then 2 years later, we moved in together. A year later, we got engaged. And she actually is one of our very best friends. She comes to our house for dinner once a week. You know, so I've been very lucky in the metamor department to have some really, really wonderful people come into my life. So,
you know, I think that's the one lesson. I think if there's any takeaway from being open and, you know, leaning towards more like a polyamorous identity, is the ability to be more understanding and more accepting. And, you know, it's not the way I was raised, where if somebody got divorced, you chose a side. And right. It was a very hard, fast, black and white line. It feels a lot more loving, a lot less constrictive, and far less judgment if you say, you know, we all hang out. Are we able to? There's a lot more conversation, a lot more communicative, you know, presence that goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been in polyamorous relationships where I didn't know my metas. And when I look back on those situations, there was a lot of uncertainty in my head and not knowing, like, and a lot of feeling of inadequacy. Is she better than me? Are they, you know, all this stuff, and kind of taking away that veil. And I mean, a lot of that had to deal with just growing up and learning how to be polyamorous. And my polyamory motto is always, you know, lighting a candle takes nothing from, you know, lighting another candle takes nothing from your flame, which is what I kind of live by and have to remind myself of. You know, that just because my partner has interest in somebody else, it doesn't mean he loves me any less. You know, and that's kind of something. Yeah. And I think, I certainly, talking about being more open and accepting, it's really about building your chosen family, which is something that, you know, LGBTQ folks know a lot about. But also people who are polyamorous. I've gone through, a really tough time with my parents this year at our wedding. They've requested that we don't have our other partners at our wedding. And That's been tough, because it's hard to imagine David not being there for, you know, one of the biggest days of my life. But they're also paying for it. So it kind of works out in that way, because if David was to come, then we would miss our fall visit together, because he would be here for my wedding. And I would obviously probably be spending time with my fiance and the husband during that time. So it's kind of fine. But we are having Victoria, my fiance's ex, who I kind of consider her just I consider her a partner of his, whether they do or not. I don't know what they're doing. But, you know, we are having her there because my parents don't know. But it's been an interesting, you know, it was the first time my parents have met multiple partners of mine. They've never questioned being poly, but for some reason getting married kind of set off this thing for them that they were like, this is real. She's non-monogamous and they're going to get married. What is she doing? And it's taken about 5 months for my mom to really come around. It started with, well, you know, and my dad from the very beginning said, I don't co-sign what your mother's saying. I don't have an issue with what you two do. I know that you love each other. Doesn't have anything, you know. And my mom was hard and fast, you know, I'll be there for the wedding, but I won't throw your shower. Well, 5 months later, you know, I got my shower invitation hosted by her mother and bridesmaids. So we're making some progress. So I don't think David will be, pipes, relax. I don't think he'll be at the wedding, but we've made some progress there. But, you know, it's just kind of managing family expectations and that kind of, and as much as I love my family and I'm very close with them, it made me very much realize, pipes, relax. It made me realize how important chosen family is. And, you know, who is going to be there that matters. And Piper, I'm sorry. I think my fiance is home from work. But just chosen family. Building your polyamorous family is what I am getting at. But yeah, this has been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Oh, no. Thank you so much for taking the call.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have to go if I was just getting an out, but.
No. If people wanted to reach out, do you want to give any social media or?
Yeah, I think I'll just stick with my Twitter, which is pretty simple, which is my poly story. So it's my POLY story on Twitter. And it says that one woman. So people are welcome to follow me there. And that's, you know, probably the best way to get in contact with me.
Awesome. Well, thank you again so much for chatting with me. It's been enlightening.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad we got the chance to chat. And I'm really looking forward to seeing how your podcast goes because I've really been enjoying reading your blog. So everything, aww. I'm like, yes, 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 yes. And I even like two of my partners are reading it this morning too. And were like sending me little excerpts and David's like, I love this. So we're new fans.
Well, now I'm blushing hardcore. So thank you for that.
Okay. Amanda told me she reads every one of your posts. So I was like, and then that's when I realized you didn't know my first name because I forget, but yeah, Molly is fine, but that's my poly story is the best way to kind of find me.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. And I very much enjoyed our chat and I hope our listeners have gained a little bit more of an understanding, maybe more interest in long distance relationships and a few other things outside of the norm. It's not nearly as scary as some people think.
It sure is that.
All right.
Well, thanks so much, Crystal. Have a great day.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
A huge thanks to episode 3's special guest, Molly. And thank you for listening to Breaking Away with Chris, a podcast for the sex positive community. Please like, share, and subscribe wherever your favorite podcasts are hosted. And please don't forget to check out the links in the bottom of this episode to see how you can reach out to Molly at My Poly Story, follow me on Twitter, join my Facebook page, or subscribe to my Patreon. Thanks again, and thanks for being so sex positive.